your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the studio. I'm Tom King. Merle Kelch is out tracking Bambi as we speak, freezing his tail off, and we are joined here in the studio by attorney Alan Haugum, pinch-hitting for Merle today. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Tom. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and we are going to talk about some retirement planning issues and estate issues as we go through the next couple of weeks. You'll be in for Merle for today and next Saturday as well. I guess, where did you want to start today?
Well, I had a couple things come up in the office this week, Tom, that I thought might be good to talk about. One was just dealing with some of the issues that, not the from the planning standpoint, because we talk a lot about what people should do to plan for the inevitable, that if something happens that I die, what do I need to have in place? When do I have to have it done? All those types of categories to be covered. But I've gotten some calls, and one in particular from some folks who have a relative, who have a parent who is in very poor health, is in has maybe only several weeks or a couple of months in that range of life, and is not going to live past that. And the family said, what should we do now? Should we do some things because they know, and the doctors have told them that the death is imminent? Should they do some things with the investments in particular now before the mom passes away? And what I did is I probably reacted to them a little bit too strongly, but I said, no, don't do anything yet. And this is a question that we've had a little bit in conjunction with some of the investment markets. Some of the stock market has gone up in the last few years, and we have some people who've had some pretty significant gains in the stock market. And the concern with the family is maybe that's too much too fast, and I am not an investment advisor. I will not give anyone investment advice or insurance advice or anything like that. I am not professionally qualified to do that. But from the tax side, there are some things that you need to remember, and part of it is with these folks, they said, look, our mom is no longer able to make decisions, so we're now in charge of that. So they have, and they had everything in place. They had the powers of attorney in place. They had the trust in place so that the trustee can handle all of those accounts. Everything was properly titled. They really did everything that you should do. They even had some tax planning done. But now they have pretty significant accounts that have gone up quite a bit, and they have a lot of capital gain. So through the years, we'll use some basic numbers, but they've invested for years and years and years and years and may have $100,000 invested. And of that $100,000, it grows to $500,000. It's the type of thing where they use some of the income to live on, where they would get dividends and things like that, and they had Social Security, but really didn't live an extravagant lifestyle. So now the question is, should we, in anticipation of what they think might be a downturn in the stock market, should they make some moves or make some decisions now? And from a tax standpoint, now I can't answer that from a financial standpoint, and I won't, but from a tax standpoint, it really is critical that they don't do something wrong too soon. And what we're talking about is just if we have something, and we'll use those numbers for easy math, if they have $100,000 that they have invested over the years very slowly, and through the years that $100,000 of cash out of their pocket that they put in has turned into $500,000, if someone was healthy and they decided to sell everything today, that's a $400,000 increase in the amount of invested. It's a $400,000 capital gain. They have to pay capital gains tax on that. And we have, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, we have about a 15% capital gains tax rate for most folks. Sometimes you can get a little bit less than that, but for most folks, they're going to pay a 15% federal capital gains tax. I think in Wisconsin, it's been traditionally around that 3.9%. So we might have a 19% or so tax. We spend $400,000, suddenly we're looking at a $75,000 tax. So if they sold, or if someone was healthy and sold everything today, they'd be paying $75,000. So these people who haven't dealt with this investment and really don't have a lot of investment background or expertise come in and say, wait a minute, all we read in the newspaper is the stock market is hitting an all-time high, and every day it's higher, and it just keeps going up, and all they read is that it inevitably is going to come back down. that it can't help but come back down. So what they want to do is they say, we'd better sell, right? We better sell to lock in all of these gains so we don't lose it while mom is, while mom's health deteriorates. And I think from the financial standpoint, this is one where it's a little bit of a tricky question, and I don't think there's one right answer, but from the tax and legal standpoint, we certainly want to be concerned, because if these people sell everything, they have to pay this about $75,000 tax. And that's real money. That's not just, oh, we'll figure out a way to get the deduction for that later, or we'll figure something other, some fancy tax maneuver. That's $75,000 they are going to write out of the checking account.
Couldn't you just... Could you sell a portion of it and then roll it over into something else and avoid the tax by keeping it invested somewhere else?
Well, the way they have it, really, no. That there are different things you could do if you have different properties. So we're going to talk about that for things like land and others. But for just the investments, for the stock market, that's really got people a little bit nervous now. No, there's nothing normal that they could do. There's nothing, unless you got to some super exotic types of things that they really don't have any interest in anyway, but you still have risk. They would just be trading one risk for another.
Yeah.
So they say, okay, so if they sell it, if they get nervous, or if they had just sold it without talking to anyone, there's a $75,000 gain that's locked in, and they pay it. So then if mom passes away 2 months from now, and the stock market's about the exact same price it was before, they've got $75,000 in tax and the remainder in a money market account. So what the concern is that they don't understand some of the tax rules. And what the tax rules are, and the important one for everyone out there in radio land to remember, is that you get a step-up in basis, or you get a step-up in cost basis at the date of death of the person who held those assets. So if we have mom who bought those stocks, and she's held them through the years, and at her death, those stocks are worth $500,000. The basis for calculating all the tax and the capital gain gets stepped up. It gets stepped up really artificially. So the $100,000 she paid gets automatically reset to $500,000. So that if the kids then, a day after mom died, sold all of the stocks the way they've been anticipating, then they would pay zero in tax. So just by them knowing some of the basics of the tax side of it, they can save $75,000 pretty easily. Now, the question comes in, well, what if the stock market goes down, or in, more particularly, what if mom's investments go down between today and the date of death? Could that happen? And it could. It absolutely could. I have no idea to know, you know, what's going up or down or anything like that. So it certainly could go down before the date of death. And if that's the case, there would be some investment loss, and they sell them the day after mom died. There's still no tax. So they have to decide, I think, you know, whether that's what's the bigger risk. And in their case, because they have such an enormous capital gain, they've decided is it's unlikely that the investments would go down that much that fast. Could they go down some? Sure. I think it's absolutely possible. It's possible they could go up. It's one of those where we have no idea. I certainly don't. But it's at least an issue where they need to grab the CPA and grab the lawyer and grab the financial advisor, get everybody in the same room so the financial advisor doesn't say, hey, you've got to sell this, at least until we get a handle on probably on mom's medical situation. And it's tough because we don't know what her... none of us are doctors, at least in that little group of people.
Yeah, you could say someone's going to die in 2 months, but they could linger for years.
Absolutely, yeah. If that goes on for a year, does that change the scenario? If someone says, well, now... mom has a year to live. Maybe mom is healthy. Mom can make her own decisions, but the doctors tell mom that she has a year to live. Is there anything she can do? Now, that's where, Tom, as you were mentioning, there might be some different financial alternatives that we could do if you could spread that out over the course of the year. That might make a little bit more sense rather than just doing it all at one time. But I think those are the questions that people need to ask just so we don't lose money that we otherwise could keep.
All right, 715-845-2155. We are here to take your estate planning questions today. Like to ask Alan a question, give us a call. We'll be right back after this on WSAU.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896. That's 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896.
I'm Elena. I have a master's degree in giving hope to children in Ethiopia.
I'm John. My farm experience helped villagers in the Philippines feed themselves.
I'm Nanaya. I have a degree in making an impact for generations to come.
If you have a degree in agriculture, the environment, or teaching English, you actually have a degree in doing more than you ever thought possible. Peace Corps volunteers can truly make a difference in the lives of people all over the world. With your skills and education, you could help create an irrigation system for a small village in Paraguay, or share new teaching methods to educators in Moldova. The experiences you'll gain in the Peace Corps will stay with you forever. This is your chance to make a real difference, a difference only you can make. Explore how the Peace Corps can fit into your future. Visit peacecorps.gov.
My resume
now includes changing lives.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This holiday season, some will spend more.
I'm going to spend more this holiday season.
Probably more money.
Am I going to be spending more?
Some will spend less.
I'm going to spend less.
I'm probably going to spend less.
Actually, I'll probably be spending less.
Some will.
Probably about the same amount as last year.
Here's an idea. While you're here, why don't you spend a few more minutes here? You know, getting to know your world.
It's good to know what's going on in your world.
Time well spent at WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. We're live. Phone lines are open, 715-845-2155. We're with attorney Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau, taking your questions on estate planning this morning. And you wanted to go in a little bit of a different direction, talking about land in a family and how you deal with keeping land or moving land off when the end comes.
You know, yeah, I think that's a good topic. Today, probably a lot of people are out hunting on that land that's
right,
so precious.
Right, yeah.
So, anybody who's not there, anybody who's still at home or with the earbuds in the tree stand, you know, what do you do with that? And a lot of it is more precious. A lot of the land and a lot of the real estate is more precious to families than things like investments or stocks or mutual funds or things like that. Those are important, very important for retirement purposes and being able to afford retirement. But when it comes to the actual assets that really give people more of a kind of a warm feeling about family, a lot of times it's real estate. It's either the cottage, or it's the farm, or the back 80, or it's just the hunting land. And we had some folks this week who said, we have some hunting land, it's down on the river, and we want to make sure that that stays in the family. How do we make sure that it stays in the family? And I said, well, how long do you want it to stay in the family? And of course they said, well, forever. That's what they had the patriarch of the family. This was another situation where a dad had passed away earlier, and this was mom and the kids, and mom was still very healthy, and she sounds like she will be for a long time. But she said, we want to set this up so that my kids and my grandkids and everyone in the family can keep it. And dad always said, and now this is, they're talking about the dad who's passed away, so dad always said he wanted to stay in the family forever. And I said, all right, let's talk about what forever means. And they had a situation where they had two kids and I think seven grandkids. And we didn't know where those grandkids were going to be. They ranged in age from, I think, 5 to just about 18. So we didn't know where they were going to end up. We don't know if they're going to live or work in the area of anything. It's kind of a game to decide. And not a game in a in a game of chance, but it's something where we can't just guess where a five-year-old is going to make their life one day. So when they said they wanted to stay in the family forever, we had to probe into that a little bit more and decide. And I think this is a question that a lot of people have when we talk about how to have joint ownership of all kinds of things. So we're going to figure that out. And with them, we really need to set a plan in place to get that all going and to get that to accomplish the goal.
All right, let's go to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
You're talking to Dan.
Dan, you're on.
Morning, Dan. How are you?
Good. I'm fine. Cold up here.
Good.
Do you? What can you tell me about reverse mortgages?
Oh, well, we can talk about those quite a bit, actually. The reverse mortgages, I would say, have changed at probably in the last 6 to 8 to 10 years more than I was anticipating. Reverse mortgages are good in certain situations, and I think everyone would tell you that from their critics to their supporters. With reverse mortgages, I think step one would be make sure that you deal with someone reputable, because I think they vary a little bit. But for those folks who don't know what they are, a reverse mortgage is where someone, I believe over 62, there's a minimum age requirement, and I believe it's 62, goes in and says to the bank that they want, instead of to pay a mortgage, they want to receive money from the value of their house. So this will happen. We'll use a few different scenarios, Dan, but the one might be where folks have said, we have spent everything. We have spent our retirement. We've spent our savings. We've spent everything right down to zero. And this isn't every scenario, but let's just use this one first. Now, we've spent everything right down to zero, and we are still living in our home, and we are going to continue to live in our home. We're healthy, but we've had such a fantastic retirement. We've gone to Branson and Florida and Hawaii more times than you can count. But we have this house, and it has the equity. This is really where we've put all of our assets, and we've paid it off, or we're close to paying it off. You don't have to, but let's say we've paid it off, and we want to use that money to live on. We're not concerned with, you know, contrary to the last example we had, we're not concerned with giving the value of the house to the kids. If there's something left, great. But what we want to do is make sure we have enough to live on. And frankly, that's my concern, too. I would much rather the parents have enough to live on, and if there's something left for the kids, then right. They can. So the parents will say, can we talk about a reverse mortgage? And what it basically is that there's a program, and it's actually a federal government kind of backed program that's dealt with through local institutions, local banks. Some banks do it a little bit differently than others. Some national insurance companies do it. But what they do is these people will go in and say, we want to apply for this reverse mortgage, which would give them either a lump sum of money or a continuing stream of money, that's like an income stream, or just access to money. And there's different reasons you'd use all three of those. So let's say that they have a $100,000 house, and they said that instead of selling it, if we sell this $100,000 house, we're going to end up using that money to pay for the next house or to pay for an apartment or to pay for living expenses. We don't want to do that. We actually just want the equity of our house, but we're going to continue living in it. Can we do it? So what they'll do is they'll apply for this reverse mortgage, and there's a formula based on your age and other things that say they will qualify for a certain percentage of that house. So let's say that they qualify for 50% of the value of their house because they're age 62. So what that means is the bank could give them $50,000 immediately. They can take it, put it in their savings account, use it, do anything they want with it, but when they die or when they leave or attempt to sell the house, the bank gets the first $50,000 plus whatever fees and interest to go along with that. And you say, well, okay. And a lot of folks say that's fine with them. That's a fine deal because they get to live in their house forever, and they get money now. Now, a lot of people say, I don't need $50,000 today. What I do is I need maybe $1,000 a month or $500 a month. Do I have to take the whole 50? And they say, no. That's where they have the line of credit. So they'll set up and say, you have the right to take $50,000, but you can take as much as you want. And they say, well, just set it up so I get $500 a month. That's enough to cover the difference in my expenses, and I can live on that for, 10 years. And, with all kinds of factors, that might work much better. I don't need it all at once, because once they take it, then they start accruing interest on the loan. If they take the whole $50,000 out, now the $50,000 starts to accrue interest.
It's tempting to spend it then, too.
Right, exactly, Tom. Yeah, they might spend it on things they don't really need. So people will take it take it out. Now, the one thing with the lines of credit, and there are different rules about this, and I'm, you know, I can get some more information we can talk about on the air next week or in future dates, but that right to the amount sometimes can increase under certain circumstances during a certain percentage. So can it go up 2% or 3% or 4% a year? So that $50,000 is line of credit in the first year, but the next year it goes up to $52,000 or $54,500. You know, can that go up over time? And then depending on some of the programs, it can. The other thing that makes it increase is if you don't apply at 62, what if you apply when you're 65 or 68 or 70? Well, if you're older, you have a lower life expectancy. Just makes sense. You're closer to your life expectancy.
Right.
So you can get a bigger percentage of the value of your house. Because if you think about it from the mortgage company standpoint, they want to make sure they get paid back. So if they give you $50,000 and you live in this thing for, you know, too long, that interest might accrue so fast that they don't get paid back. So the government actually says they will back up this loan. The government will ensure that the mortgage company gets paid. So the government says you can't have more than a certain amount depending on your age. And it's, I think it's usually the age of the younger participant, but there's a different formula for that. So it's one where this can work, and in some cases can work pretty well. It's usually not the first thing people would do. If you had lots and lots and lots of retirement accounts and assets all over the place, it might not be the first thing you do. But there are some folks who think that even if you do have retirement assets, that it can be used almost as a retirement strategy. You know, one of the things you can do and that we've heard of some folks doing is they say, I don't need it. I don't need the money, but I'm going to apply for the reverse mortgage anyway just to get it locked in, just to get it locked in based on the value of my house. I'm going to get a $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 line of credit that I can access if I need to on short notice.
Okay.
All right. Now, there's some fees for doing that. There's a price to pay for the application.
That was
and there's
my
some
next
fees.
Question. Yeah,
there's absolutely. And what some people do is they'll just roll the cost of the fees into the loan.
Okay.
Well, if you say, I'm not going to take any of the money out, I just want to get that line of credit established, you can. Maybe pay the fees in cash. And I'm not, you know, to everybody out there in listening land, I'm not saying this is what you should do, but it's something that some folks we've talked to have done, and they think it works pretty well. But again, you do it with someone reputable, and it goes a long way. But if you do that, maybe you set up a line of credit, and you say, I don't need it yet, but in some circumstances, the value of that line of credit can increase at a rate that's faster than you otherwise would have thought it would have. So it might just assure that you have access to that in the future. And if that makes sense, I think you know, this is one where you grab a paper and a pencil and you create the chart or the spreadsheet or you put it on your computer and you figure if this makes sense. And if it does, it's something you go with, or at least you talk to people about. There is a mandatory education class. The government says you can't just go down to your bank and do this. You have to go through this this training that the government mandates. But I think it's good. I think it's a good thing so that everybody understands it. Everybody understands the rules. But
two questions.
Sure.
How do you determine who's reputable? And the second, I've been told that you lose, immediately upon doing this, you lose title to your home.
Well, I don't think it's when you talk about losing title, that means different things to different people. So, you know, from the purely technical standpoint, you don't lose title to your home. You're not giving someone your home. They're putting a lien on your home.
Okay.
They're putting a first lien on your home, generally, because
They're
going to, if you have a mortgage, and people can do this if they have a mortgage still to pay. What happens is the reverse mortgage pays off the current mortgage, and now the reverse mortgage is in first position.
I don't have that. We're free and clear. But.
Yeah. And right. and the as to who's reputable part,
yes.
I think some of it has to do if you've heard of them before.
I probably don't want to go with the late night TV guys.
Well,
maybe,
I agree.
Maybe a bank down the street would be a better option.
That's what I thought, yes.
You know, whatever your local community is, and there are people, and there are people we've dealt with, and just about all of them, who are very good at this. If it's someone you've never heard of, or if there's an 800 number, but you talk to a panel of whomever 24 hours a day, I would say that's the first place to start with not dealing with them.
Okay, I got you.
All right.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155. We need to take a quick break for some news. We'll come back with more. We're talking to attorney Alan Haugum today on the program. Back in a moment after this on WSAU.
So So I'm apartment hunting and having this debate with a landlord.
Like I said, no pets. Just can't rent you the unit.
Yeah, he's a dog, but sir, he's not a pet.
He's four-legged. He's hairy. He's on a leash. That's a pet.
No, Henry is an assistance animal. Look, I'm legally blind. Couldn't you make a reasonable accommodation for my guide dog?
Young lady, you can call your canine friend anything you want. Those are the rules.
Rules? Rules that allow for housing discrimination? So I made a call to HUD to confirm that, indeed, landlords must make reasonable accommodations for assistance animals. And now we're so happy in our new apartment.
If you think you've been discriminated against because of your disability, race, color, religion, national origin, sex, or familial status, call the HUD hotline, 1-800-669-9777, or go to hud.gov/fairhousing. File a complaint. Make something happen.
Fair housing is your right. Use it.
A public service message from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9. WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Germany's foreign minister is warning that talks on Iran's nuclear program are not a done deal. He made the comment as officials from six world powers gathered again in Geneva for more negotiations. A winter storm is expected to create a chaotic situation over the weekend. Forecasters say the storm will produce heavy snow in sections of the Rockies and Four Corners and spread a wintry mess into parts of the southern plains. The mountains of Southern California will also see heavy snow through today. Closer to home, Wisconsin Rapids police have arrested a man and confiscated a large amount of drugs and money. It happened Thursday as a search warrant was executed on the city's west side. They seized 64 grams of crack cocaine with a street value around $6,400, along with $3,000 in cash. The man arrested is in the Wood County Jail on a probation hold. His name has not been released as of yet. Meanwhile, a man in Wausau made his initial appearance in court yesterday. He's charged with having $14,000 in crack cocaine and a couple of guns that were seized from an Eastside Wausau home on Tuesday. 39-year-old Adrian Holly is in jail being held on a $50,000 cash bond. In sports, the Bucks lost in overtime at Philly last night. They host Charlotte tonight. The Badger men's basketball team is in action tonight, hosting Oral Roberts. You can hear that game right here, pregame show at 6:30. The Badger football team takes on Minnesota today in the border battle for Paul Bunyan's axe, pregame show at 12:30. And the Pointer volleyball team came up short in the national semifinals. They lost to Cal Lutheran yesterday, 3-0. The Newsline 9 weather forecast for today. We're looking for partly cloudy conditions, cold and breezy, with a high around 17. Tonight, clear and cold, a low of only 1 above. Partly sunny and cold on Sunday with a high of 20. Looking ahead to Monday, partly cloudy, a bit warmer with a high getting up to 33. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
We're here today to ask people about marriage.
For starters, what's the best thing about being married?
Who I get to stay married to.
Togetherness.
To me, is having a companion.
My favorite thing about being married is that I have a partner.
Do you think your marriage is good for more than just the two of you?
Can we just influence those around us?
Yeah, I think.
In a positive way?
I think so.
I would hope that people would see that when we're together that we really have a very true affection for each other.
What everybody wants, and we know we're lucky to have it.
The energy we give out in our home, I think, spreads out to other people.
Your marriage just continues to go on and on and on.
Oh, sure, and it affects generations after us.
I think it really sort of stabilizes your whole community. It's a cornerstone of a society, right?
Sounds like a good marriage goes a long way.
It touches a lot of people.
Want to improve your marriage? For ideas, go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Church.
Let's get one thing straight here. Or we're going to tape you to a goalpost, shave your head, and make you carry our headphones around the radio station. And then we're... What's this? Is it... according to this, everything I just said could be interpreted as bullying or hazing, and that's no longer tolerated. So, pretty please with sugar on top?
Listen for the Packers and Vikings this Sunday. Game coverage begins at 10 a.m.
Thank you. News, talk, sports, WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with attorney Alan Haugum, the Haugum Law Firm in Wausau. Taking your questions today, 715-845-2155, the number to call. Let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
David.
David, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Morning, David.
Good morning.
Now, Wisconsin recently, as recent as October 1st, passed a new statute called Act 20. Can you tell me in plain English what that means?
Sure, David. Actually, that's what we're going to talk about next week in a lot more detail. They have some details, I think, coming out, some clarification coming out this week. What Act 20 is, for the folks out there, is on June 30th, I believe, is the first day, David, the governor signed our new budget. I think it's a biennial budget, July 1st of 2013 to June 30th of 2015. So, and this is something that it's probably about a five-hour conversation that we'll try to cram into, 8 minutes today, and maybe we'll spend the hour on next week or a good part of the hour on next week. But what it did was it wants to expand what's something called estate recovery. That's one of the big parts, and there's a number of things to it, but the one that impacts my profession is that the state wants to expand the amount of money that they can get if someone needed nursing home care, the amount of money they can collect after your death. So what we mean is, in a typical situation, David, we'd have a husband and wife, and if they don't do any planning whatsoever, and one spouse needs nursing home care, what the state used to do years ago is they would say, well, the healthy spouse, or what we call the community spouse, the healthy spouse can keep certain assets, and the rest of them are going to go to pay the husband's nursing home care. We'll be stereotypical and say it's the husband that needs nursing home care and it's the wife that's the healthy spouse for now. So the husband would need the nursing home care, and they would have to spend down enough assets to get to these kind of minimum limits. And they'd say, well, the wife could keep a car, she can keep the house, and she can keep about $50,000. And in some circumstances, we could increase that 50 to a little over 100, even up to about 110 or so. But let's just say that the wife can keep a house, a car, and $50,000. And what happened was, then that was hers. That was supposed to be what she had to live on. She could keep her income, and under certain circumstances, even a little bit of his income to pay the monthly bills. But those were her assets. So if the husband and wife had $200,000 of assets or $500,000, or, she could keep that somewhere between 50 and about 110. But that was it. So we said, okay. So if we have the wife, and just for easy math, we say that she keeps the house, the car, and $50,000. And that was enough for her, that she was pretty frugal. Her income was enough to pay the bills. And then when she died, the state would say, well, wait a minute. We're going to come back and get some things from, from the husband at his death. But oftentimes the wife could transfer those assets that she kept exempt, the house, the car, and the $50,000, give it to the kids or give it to whomever at her death. Well, now what the state says is, and they've changed these rules over the years, and this Act 20, as of this year that David's speaking about, really put a lot of teeth into it. For better or worse, the state says you can't keep those things anymore. And again, this has been a process. This wasn't something that just happened one time. But as the process has continued, and it continued pretty aggressively this year, in saying that when the wife dies, now the state can come back and get all of her assets at her death. And you say, wait a minute, I thought she could keep the house and the car and the $50,000. And what the state says is you can't keep it, you can just use it. So that house that we used to think of as exempt, now the state says if the wife leaves the house, they can get it. So the state will put a lien on the house, or the state will say that they have the first right to the house. If husband has received nursing home care and the state, through the Medicaid or medical assistance program, has paid for any part of that nursing home care, they say they're going to put a lien on her house and lien on her other real estate, and if she dies, they're going to come and collect so that it's not hers, and the $50,000 that she had. She can use that. She can put it in the bank and get interest, or invest it and get some gains on it, or she can spend it and it goes down a little bit. But whatever's left at her death, the state's going to want. So it has become much, much more aggressive about doing that. Now, the federal government says Wisconsin doesn't have to do this. Wisconsin has the right to do certain things. Wisconsin has the obligation to do other things. But there are minimums and maximums as far as Wisconsin's enforcement. And what our state has done, what Wisconsin has done, is kind of pushed all of the buttons up to 10. That they have gone to the maximum on just about all of these. And in some cases, gone beyond the maximum. if that makes a little bit of sense, kind of for a visual, that they say that, there's certain things that Wisconsin has to do, but they can't do it any more severely or any more stringently than the federal government allows. And in some cases, some people believe Wisconsin's gone beyond that, that they have now passed some laws that go beyond what the federal government allows them to do. So there's some discussion, and one of the reasons that we have clarifications coming out for this almost on a weekly or monthly basis is because there are some folks who are trying to talk to the state to clarify exactly what these new rules mean, because it's a little bit confusing. They had some delayed implementation dates. This was passed on June 30th. One of the implementation dates was October 1st, as you said, David. But on September 18th, I believe, the Joint Committee on Finance down in Madison got together and said, wait a minute. Now, these are the people who have to give the final blessing on the enforcement. They said that some of these are going to have a delayed implementation. Some are not going to be enforced at all. Others are going to be enforced immediately on October 1st. So that became confusing.
How does it affect the trust?
Well, it depends on what type of trust, and it depends on when you did it. If you create a trust correctly, or you create it with this in mind, what you can do is protect some of those things that you still had. You know, can the spouse find a way to protect the house? Yes, she can do it with some thought ahead of time. What it really does is, even, you know, we've talked on the show about can you protect your assets. In fact, that's probably something we can talk about again. That's one of the things we're going to talk about next week. What do they call that, a tease? Is that a tease for next?
Yeah, that's right.
Radio lingo. You have to have Tom translate for me. But you still can. It's just you have to do things further ahead of time now. You know, for the folks who said, oh, you know what, I'm just going to wait. If something ever happens to me, boy, I'm just going to give it to the kids then, and I'll get more of a, we can protect some of it. Well, what the state has said is a lot of that planning that happens later is going to have less effectiveness. And I think that's some of the goal of the state. Whether that's good, bad, or indifferent is up to everyone. But I think some of the goal is that they're trying to do away with some of the last-minute planning. So if someone says, I'm not going to do anything yet, or let me think about it, or maybe I'll do it later, and then they just don't get around to it, and all of a sudden someone calls and says, hey, Dad just had a stroke. He's going to need long-term care. We never did anything about the hunting land or the cottage or, you know, whatever else of value, just the mutual funds or something we want to transfer to the kids, the house. We never done anything about the house. So now we're going to do it last minute. Well, I think a lot of that is going to be done, that there's still things you can do, but a lot of the effectiveness of that is really going to be diminished if you haven't done it ahead of time, preferably 5 years ahead of time. That really, it kind of seems to become their cliff. There's always things you can do, but they have less effectiveness than they used to. The other thing is with people who used to give real estate to kids and keep a life estate. A lot of that effectiveness has been limited because now the state says, and David, one of the big things about this Act 20, and I think anyone who's given real estate to kids with a life estate, or who knows anyone who did this and thought it sounds like a good idea for you, I would stop and think very, very hard about this. Just because the state now says that they want to collect the value of the life estate for anyone who needed nursing home care or who needed, I should say, Medicaid or medical assistance with the nursing home care, but had previously given the real estate to the kids and kept that life estate. Now the state says they want you to pay the value of the life estate to the state of Wisconsin after death. And you say, wait a minute. What is a life estate? Well, a life estate is the right to live somewhere, right? It's the right to use a house, let's say, as a residence. And if you die, that goes away. You don't have the right to live somewhere if you're not living. So the value of your life estate as of death is zero. By definition, it's zero. You don't, there's no value to it. So the state said, okay, I hear what you mean. So we're going to change the rule. We want you to pay the state of Wisconsin the value of the life estate as of the day before the date of death. How does that sound? And you say, wait a minute. So on a, you know, just take your, I don't know what an average house is, $150,000 house, let's say. On a $150,000 house, if the value of the life estate is 30%, which is pretty common, that's, you know, it changes as you get older, it goes down, but it hangs. There's a pretty significant percentage for a long, long time. Let's say the value of the life estate was 30%. As of the date of death, it's worth zero. But the day before the date of death, it was worth 30%. So 30% of a $150,000 house means you have to pay over $45,000. So you have to pay $45,000 to the state because someone had a life estate that they weren't exercising, really couldn't exercise, and after they died, went away. The state says, exactly. Now, hand over the $45,000. And really, that's because they didn't do it correctly. You know, some people will say, well, we're going to draft this life estate, and it sounds like a great idea, but now we have a $45,000 check to write. I thought we were protecting things. Well, no. You know, they really weren't. They thought they did, and maybe 20 years ago that worked well, or even 10 years ago that worked somewhat well. It wasn't a great idea even then, but it did something. Well, now the state has really gutted the effectiveness, and a lot of that is Act 20, David. And we can get into that a lot more, probably with more time next week.
Good. Thank you very much.
No, you're welcome.
Appreciate the call. 715-845-2155. We need to take a break. We still have a few minutes left. If you'd like to give Alan a call with a question, 715-845-2155. Give us a call right now on WSAU.
Tuesdays. The Car Chasers are back on CNBC Prime.
Cash talks, they're in the York walk.
They find, fix, and flip cars with passion.
I got skills that'll pay the bills.
Putting their own money on the line and revving up the big bucks.
I got a deal for you.
I'm all ears.
The Car Chasers, Tuesdays, 10 Eastern. CNBC at Night is the new CNBC Prime.
Booyah! In the bag, baby!
When business is a gamble, it's all about the hustle.
These are my friends and neighbors. As soon as the danger of the storm had passed, we needed to get out there.
I first walked these boards holding my dad's hand when I was a little kid, and that's the way it is here.
It's great.
And it'll be great again.
It will, exactly.
We've seen setbacks, but mostly we've seen overwhelming achievement.
We're Jersey Strong here in Seaside, and we can do this.
For them and for us, it's personal.
NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, weeknights on NBC.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Hi, I'd like to report a bear hug.
Uh-huh, okay.
Well, we were building a bonfire, and I saw some, like, dry brush and leaves around, so, you know, I said to move the bonfire somewhere else, and out of nowhere, Smokey Bear shows up and hugs me.
So you noticed some wildfire hazards and moved your bonfire to a safer location.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Smokey, all right. He likes it when people help prevent wildfires. It hits him close to home. Not everybody gets the hug, my friend. So that's pretty special to get a hug from Smokey Bear.
So it was him. Hey, guys, I told you it was Smokey.
Okay, well, congratulations, my friend. And thanks for calling. There are many ways to prevent a wildfire. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
WSAU feedback.
Last time you were at the emergency room, for example, was there a question on there that asked you if there were any guns in your home?
I don't remember filling out that detailed of a questionnaire. You're going to tell me that there is an emergency room somewhere that does have that question.
I find that to be inappropriate. It is not, first of all, it's not the doctor's job to find out whether or not I have a gun in my home.
The day's biggest newsmakers and your calls. Feedback at 8 on WSAU.
hour back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Alan Haugum with the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau. Taking your questions, 715-845-2155. What did you want to finish up with today as we head down the back stretch here?
You know, I think a couple things. When before we had a couple of phone calls, we talked about the family that wanted to keep that land, that kind of hunting land along the river in the family forever. I think when you do that, that's one that we can talk about, but think about what that means, and there's a few different options that we have, and I think we could talk about as time goes on.
All right, we have another phone call, though. Let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Ken.
Hey, Ken, you're on with Alan. Go
morning,
ahead.
Morning, Ken.
I have a reversible trust, and I was thinking of changing the power of attorneys and just change who's going to be in charge of it. Right now, my wife and I are the first line of defense, if you want to call it that.
Okay.
And these other ones would be assigned, if you want to call it that. And I wanted to. I had one person taking care of the whole works, the power of a health attorney, the durable power, to take care of finance and stuff like that.
Sure.
And what I want to do is break that down. I want to change them. I want to change the person that's in charge of it now to other people, and they're all my. Staley is going to be in my family. My own children. So.
Okay.
And is there an easy way of doing this without going through a lot of rigmarole? Because there's a lot of papers to, you know, to set up.
I would say yes. There's an easy way to do it. And if Ken, if you'd allow me to use just a couple of papers, I think you can get it done. I think that would be the recommendation. With the powers of attorney, the durable power of attorney for finances. And the power of attorney for health care. Now, depending on when you did you do it in the last, say, 5-10 years, you think?
No, because, well, just before the turn of the century.
Okay.
1895,
or?
Yeah.
No, just kidding. Ken. There's a couple things. One is there's three different things there, and I think for the jobs, just to recap, we have a power of attorney for finances, we have a power of attorney for health care decisions, and then we have a backup trustee for your trust. Now, I think you said a reversible trust, but you might be in a revocable trust.
Revocable trust.
We understand. Good.
Okay.
So what you say is, I think there's a couple things. With the revocable trust first,
okay.
I would, there's a provision in all of those that says you have the right to amend that. The two people who created it, let's say that you and your wife created it, you have the right to amend it, and part of what you can amend is who's going to do the work after you've died.
Okay.
So step one, I think you create an amendment that says after we've both died or when we both can't be the trustee because we're incapacitated, that we're going to change that section or that paragraph so that now this person, now my oldest son is going to be the backup trustee instead of the, you know, daughter number three or whatever you had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You just name that person. You both sign it, and I think we're good. But have someone draft that. You have to do it officially.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, that's number one. For the powers of attorney, those are old enough that while you could amend those, you really almost never do. It's easier just to draft a new one, and that's pretty inexpensive. It's pretty easy. With the power of attorney for health care, you can get that at the clinic for free, at the hospital for free. We do it for our clients for free, just so it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy. It's a Wisconsin state form. To my knowledge, they haven't changed the language on that form since, I think, October of 98. To tell you that it has been consistently the same language. It looks a little different. There's different type font, but it's the same language for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to change that, just, you know, even have someone do that for you just so it gets done. A lot of people say, oh, no, I'm going to do that myself because I can do it for free from the clinic. I'm like, all right, have you done it? Well, no. I filled it out, but we haven't signed it. I'm like, how long have you been carrying that copy around? Well, I've had that for 7 years now, but never signed. So just have somebody do it and get it signed and be done.
Mm-hmm.
With the power of attorney for finances, that I think might be the most important document in a lot of people's plans, at least during their lifetime. There are about 50 different versions of that thing, including some that the state bar puts out for free, that the state of Wisconsin puts out for free, and in my opinion are not very good. The rules on that have changed pretty substantially. So there are some things that you can do, and particularly when we talked about, for example, David's question with Act 20 and protecting assets or protecting the land or the house or some anything, it is incredibly important that you get that one done well. So that's where, you know, go grab the, you know, your estate planning attorney or the your elder law attorney or whoever helped you draft that revocable trust and just get a good, solid power of attorney for finances or a durable power of attorney for finances, and you will be much better ahead. Plus, if you didn't do it for the last 5 or 10 years, those rules have changed in Wisconsin somewhat. So I would say my recommendation is just have somebody do that. It's really not going to be – it's pretty inexpensive to do that stuff. It doesn't take a whole lot of time, but you'll be in a much better place. You've done all the work ahead of time. Just make sure that it stays up to date.
Okay.
Sound good? Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right. Well, we're just about out of time here. But if folks want to get a hold of you on Monday to have further questions about this or anything else regarding estate planning, how can they do that?
Sure. Well, our office, again, I didn't say it. I'm Alan Haugum. We are at the Haugum Law Firm. Took a long time to name that. But we're over on the west side of Wausau. Our phone number is 715-843-5001, 843-5001, or the Internet. We get a lot of questions off the Internet. It's haugumlaw.com, and someone asked me to spell that. It's H-O-U-G-U-M-L-A-W, H-O-U-G-U-M-law.com. And, yeah, we'd be happy to help. Otherwise, have a good hunting season, a safe one, too.
That's right, and we'll talk to you next Saturday.
Yep, happy Thanksgiving, Tom.
All right, coming up, we've got a big day of sports for you. First of all, the news is on the way, then the polka shows. Badger football is this afternoon as Wisconsin takes on Minnesota for Paul Bunyan's Axe. And that game comes your way from Minneapolis. Pregame show at 12:30 right here. The kickoff set for 2:30. And then tonight, Badger basketball. The Badgers hosting Oral Roberts at the Kohl Center in Madison. Pregame show at 6:30. The tip set for 7:30. So that's going to wrap things up for today. We've got the news on the way next, as we said, on WSAU.
Business is a dream come true, and many business owners rely on help from others to reach their potential. That's where SCORE comes in. With more than 12,000 volunteers ready and willing to help businesses succeed.
SCORE is a nonprofit organization where we provide free business consulting services to people who want to start a business already in business.
For nearly 50 years, SCORE mentors have been helping businesses get off the ground, achieve their goals, and realize their dreams.
What's even better than dreams is making a dream come true.
Come join us and help tomorrow's business success stories unfold today. Your advice and expertise can make all the difference in the world.
I believe one person can make a difference.
Small business owners need you.
Volunteer your expertise. You've got it. Share it.
Volunteer your expertise today at score.org.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio, I'm Paul Stevens. Stormy weather in the west being blamed for 4 deaths, 3 in Northern California.
It's rough, especially across parts of Texas where we've had icing for the last couple of days, and we've got about another day and a half of this storm across areas of Texas, and that's because the upper-level disturbance, all the energy of this, is across parts of Arizona right now. Phoenix has had over 2.5 inches of rain in the last day and a half. You only get about 7 inches in a year, and they've had just that in the last couple of days.
Fox meteorologist Rick Reichmuth, that storm heading east now over the next 2 days, also expected to bring snow to parts of New Mexico and West Texas. Some progress reported in talks with Iran over its nuclear program. Diplomats, including Secretary of State John Kerry, gathering in Geneva. The question now is just how close they are to a deal.
I think they traveled in hope, not expectation. And I think what happened is when they said things like, we're hopeful of a breakthrough, that has been...